Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hi, hello, and welcome to Call What You Want, your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, the U.S. men's national team in particular. I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Jesse Marsh and Charlie Davies, and we have a big show, boys. We are talking about Tyler Adams coming back and starting for Bournemouth. That is awesome. We're going to have some Copa America power rankings, which is, and then we'll get into Americans abroad, of course, that's really an extension of Tyler, but I just really want to talk about Tyler. Really excited about that. Colombia and Brazil, some upcoming friendlies. What should our expectations be? And what should we tell the fans to expect with regard to that? And then some hidden talents for players we've played with. But first, it's the Call What You Want word of the day. Who's feeling good about this? Chuck, you were on fire last time. I mean, you're like,
He's got a couple in a row. Let's not get too excited.
All right, fine. Okay.
As we know, the game is called so many different things around the world, and soccer, football, calcio, futebol. Now, though, in this particular region, this game, this beautiful game, is known as Koishbambuk. Koishbambuk. Yeah, I'm sure that's hitting the brain in the right way. Koishbambuk. Two clues. Yes. Here we go. This country's national team currently sits 190th in FIFA's men's world rankings. Okay. So make sure, hey, if you're listening,
I have the part
in your car, or if you're on a run, or wherever you're listening or watching our show, you gotta stay out loud where you think this is. Koishbambuk.
I'm gonna go. Right now,
I got another clue.
Asian Pacific is where I'm going, but okay.
Okay, I'm not tipping my hand there.
I might go a little African. I'm thinking African. Okay. Next,
at some point, Botswana is going to fit into this, but it's not Botswana.
At some point.
The winning this club from this country's top division, Konkunas Urchim, plays its home games in the world's coldest capital city, Ulaanbaatar.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
It's where Mount Everest is.
Yes.
Yes or no, Jimmy?
It's not Nepal. It's not Nepal. Is it? I mean, Nepal is, I don't think Tibet is Lhasa. Nepal is Kathmandu. Maybe it's Bhutan.
It's got to be that area.
Yeah, we got final answers. Got it.
Mongolia and that.
I'm going Bhutan.
Chuck?
I'm gonna go with what I said, Tibet. Nepal.
Tibet's both wrong.
And Bhutan is wrong.
And Bhutan
is wrong.
Coldest capital city.
Am I right in that part of the world?
Tick tock. Yes, you are in the right area of the world.
All right, I'm getting close.
You're getting close.
I know I'm good.
Tick tock.
Look at Jesse's Googling. This guy's Googling.
It could be like Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan.
I'm going to go.
Last chance. Here we go.
Last chance for me.
It's going to be a draw here. Cats game. What do we got? Okay. Where are you going?
I'm going to go with
Uzbeki.
You're going with Uzbeki? I'm going to go. Pakistan.
It was Mongolia. Chuck, you said it, but didn't go with it.
Oh, man.
I said it.
And what did you say? What's the capital you said?
Oh, my God.
I mean, in the way that we would say it or see it is Ulaanbaatar, but
I think I should have known that.
I'll take the win. You said, I think it's this, I think it's that, it could be that, it could be this. That's where Mongolia fit into it.
All I know is in the past, if someone has said it, you've given it to them. That's okay.
I'll give Charlie that.
Are you out of your mind? Right, I was spot on.
I'll give Charlie that.
He named five other countries.
I was there.
All right, let's talk about the big news. The news I really want to get into. Tyler Adams is back. He played all 90 minutes for Bournemouth in their big 2-1 win over Everton this past weekend. And now I guess the big question is, what does that mean for our men's national team midfield? I feel like at some point we'd emotionally accepted that he might not be a part of Copa America this summer, which was going to be a big loss for us. But we hadn't played with him and the team for so long. And then he comes back and scores an absolute peach of a goal against Mexico in the Nations League final. Is it now time, given that performance? Jesse, I'm coming to you first because you got to coach Tyler many, many years. Is it time to move on from the McKinney, Musa, and Adams midfield? Is Musa going to get squeezed out and Gio's going to come central? Is that where we're going or what happens now? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's possible. It may also depend on what the game is. You know, if you need a group that's a little bit more defensive on the day. And so, I mean, Gio proved that against Jamaica that he was a good sub off the bench. He proved in the game against Mexico that he was good from the start. So I think that in general, Gio continues to be a big part of the national team. To me, Tyler Adams is the alpha dog, right? He's the one that is running that team. He's in control of that team. He's the biggest leader. He's the biggest voice. He's the biggest presence on the pitch. So for me, that's an easy one. Tyler plays always when he's healthy. And then, yeah, I mean, with the performances of Weston, and I watched Weston again coming off the bench at halftime against Juventus for Juventus this week, and thought he had a good performance, wasn't enough. And in the end, they gave up a last second goal, literally last second goal against Lazio. But, you know, I'm always impressed with Weston and what he's able to deliver with the national team at the club level. Like, he's having such a great season. So, and then I still think Musa is a big piece of the puzzle. And there may be days where maybe he doesn't start, or maybe they decide to start with Gio. And then Gio goes as long as he can. Weston goes as long as he can. And then you put Musa in to then balance out the game the way you need to. So, but I do think it does become difficult for all four to be on the pitch at the same time with the way that Greg Berhalter likes to play.
And not only was Tyler Adams, Charlie, back for Bournemouth, but he got named man of the match in their 2-1 win versus Everton. He was all over the place. And when he's healthy, he is just a beast. He covers so much ground. We're getting a look here, if you can see it, of his heat map and just the pockets of space that he pops in. And where, I mean, he's all over. The heat map's all over. It's quite incredible. So if he's in the team and you have Gio Reyna, who we think when healthy, or even if he's not playing minutes in the team, then that next spot, would you ever sacrifice Weston for Eunice or anybody else? It feels like it's looking like it's not going to be MMA anymore. It's going to be what are we going to call it?
A new acronym.
It can be our arm in midfield. That's what we're going to go.
Yeah, but we got to figure out actually what that third spot is. And is there room for a 4-5-1? Is there a 3-5-2? Is there a way to keep Weston in the team? Remember, Weston initially broke into Juve as the right wing back and he would come inside. So there are ways to make it work. And again, like Jesse said, it depends on the opponent, depends on form and consistency. Tyler Adams is a beast. We all know that. No one's ever doubted his ability to cover all that space in from midfield to, you know, put out fires, to recover. Just incredible, tough tackler. But again, it's consistency. Can he stay healthy? We've seen that he's improved his game with his distribution and his finishing now from outside the box. If he adds that to his repertoire, there's no telling to how high, how far he can go as a player at the club level. So I'm excited to see Tyler Adams back because we know what he means to the team on and off the pitch in terms of playing at a tempo, holding everyone up to a high standard, that he's almost irreplaceable. So again, that puts a little bit more pressure on Yunus Musa, puts a little bit more pressure on Weston McKennie. And we know Weston can take his game another step forward, if not two steps forward. So it's a healthy Tyler Adams is great for the U.S. men's national team.
All right. So we got some acronyms from our producers here. It could be RAM. It could be ARM, like I said, probably not as cool. We got Weston, Adams, and Reyna equals war. So we have a war in midfield. And let's be honest, it's a cliche. Games are won or lost in midfield. So we go to war with our guys. That has some legs. I like that one, producer Des and producer Ivis. All right, so let's get into...
They're all stupid.
Yeah, whatever.
I was waiting for somebody to say
call them
like
Adams. Just say Adams, McKennie, and Reyna.
No, we want to have fun. We're trying to get like headline stuff, New York Post type headlines here. Okay, so let's talk then about our depth because this is one of my favorite components of the U.S. men's national team. Just we have so many options. The fact that we could potentially leave Yunus Musa, who's one of our most talented players, on the bench because we've got better options is kind of cool and kind of crazy at the same time. Now our producers put together a list of 12 players that we could roll out in midfield. We have Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, Luca De La Torre, Johnny Cardoso, Gio Reyna, Brendan Aaronson, Busio, Tesman, Tillman, Maloney, Acosta. Now, I know there's going to be some...
What's the acronym for those for the midfield? What's the acronym for the midfield?
I got it. Get out of here!
Somehow we can make it say beast mode is in there somehow. We can make it all play out that way. So I guess the big question is, with all these options, who would you like to see start, Jesse Marsh, against Brazil and Colombia in our friendlies prior to Copa America?
Adams, McKennie, Reyna. That's the group that I think. You know, and I take specifically these two warm-up matches. We talked about the Olympic team, right? The 23s. And we talked about their FIFA window and that their two opponents. And specifically when they played against France, that they should go out and play the way they want to play, be what they want to be. And so, of course, we get a little bit lucky in that match to hang around at 2-0 and then come up with two chances at the end of the match. But overall, I thought in possession, the team tried to achieve what they wanted and tried to be brave with the ball again, and then defensively and against the ball. I thought they tried to be aggressive at the right times. And it was still clear on the day that the talent for France was higher than the talent for us. But, you know, on any day, especially if you try to stay true to what you want to be and you can be at your best on a given day and you can have good performances from individuals, then you give yourself a chance. And so going into that match, I think you've got to put a team on the pitch that is going to go after the game, that's going to try to stay true to how you want to play in all phases of the game, to play brave, to not worry about the score, and to now see if you can be at your best against some of the best opponents. And of course, if you can perform well, and if you can be organized, and if you can be very succinct in all phases of the game, you give yourself a chance. You give yourself a chance to win the match.
No, I agree with that. I think what's interesting is, how much tinkering do you do? These are obviously two friendlies that you want to try maybe a couple different combinations. So I wonder how Greg Berhalter and the coaching staff are going to approach this. Are you going to roll out the same team in two consecutive games and just try to strengthen your top unit as you go into that tournament? Or are you going to look for something a little bit different? Charlie, what do you think?
I think, Jimmy, that you're going to throw out two different lineups. Not drastically different, but there's going to be some pieces that you mix and match and see what's the best combination. Again, it goes with form. Is Haji Wright still producing? Is he still playing large amounts of time? Is he still getting the minutes needed to continue to build off of what he did in the Nations League? Gio Reyna, got more minutes this past weekend. Finally, he got more minutes in this one appearance than he did in the last, I think, six appearances with Nottingham Forest. So that's a step in the right direction. But again, it's about form and who's playing well, who's fit, who's healthy. And ideally, you're trying to see, okay, if we're getting success with this lineup, then you want to keep it going. But I think we should, I know we're going to talk about it later in a different segment, depending on the team that you're playing, a Bolivia, a Panama, or Uruguay, Brazil, Colombia, I think the tactics change and possibly the team changes as well.
Yeah, lots of questions. And hopefully we'll get into some more answers as Charlie correctly teased a little later. But we got our first break of Call What You Want. When we come back, we're going to get into some Copa America power rankings. And I'm very curious to see if all of our listeners, all of our loyal listeners, feel the same way that we do. So come back and join us for it.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back to Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Jesse and Charlie. And as we promised, we're getting into our Copa America power rankings. Now, to give everybody some context, we all sent our own individual top 16 lists to our producers, and then producer Dez in particular mashed all those together, and then this is our averaged out ultimate ranking. We'll get into that a little bit, but the groups are set. Canada and Costa Rica being the last two teams to qualify, and we're excited about this. It's going to be a great tournament. I'm a little sad that the U.S. isn't playing on the West Coast, but maybe in the knockout rounds we can get that all figured out. But I guess the big question is, where does the U.S. men's national team rank among the top 16 for us, so the top 16, all 16 of these teams? I'm curious. Producer Dez, let's throw up this graphic so everybody can see.
Let's see what we got.
For those that can't see it. All right, Argentina 1, no big surprise, reigning World Cup champions. Brazil 2, Uruguay number 3, Colombia 4, U.S. 5. According to the powers that be, Producer Dez, our top 5 was the same. We all picked the same top 5. Jesse Marsh, you were surprised about that because you had mentioned off camera that maybe you had U.S. at 4, but Colombia has looked sick recently. Lucho Diaz in particular. James Rodriguez always shows up and is a different beast for his country.
And then I have Ecuador, which you have on the list too, at 6. And I think the discrepancy between Uruguay and Ecuador and Colombia and U.S. and being there, those four teams, I probably stick to what I chose, which is Uruguay third, Colombia fourth, USA fifth, and Ecuador sixth. But I do believe it's pretty close in there. And I think that those matchups would all be very interesting against each other. And on one day, maybe one team's a little bit better than the other. You know, with Bielsa and Uruguay, this is a team that's not easy to play against with their man marking and the way that they make it difficult on the opponents and some of their passing patterns. So obviously, I think I'm looking forward to see how the U.S. plays against them and that kind of style and what they come away with. But yeah, in general, I think it's pretty clear the top two. I think there's a group at the bottom that's pretty clear as well. And then there's, for me, the second best group and the third best group that you could argue about how they fit and where what the ranking and order is.
Now, Chuck, let me just roll out the list here. So I named the top five: Ecuador 6, Mexico 7, Chile 8, Canada 9, Venezuela 10, Peru 11, Jamaica 12, Paraguay 13, Panama 14, Costa Rica 15, and hanging out at the bottom is Bolivia. They might get relegated after this tournament. Where are your thoughts on where the U.S. is? Is Mexico too high? Given what I saw, Mexico at 7, that was a hard one for me because I'm obviously having some recency bias. Mexico did not look good. I know they played well against Panama, but against us, they were not good. And maybe that's more credit to us than what it says about Mexico.
Yeah, I think the top six are set, no doubt. Mexico, are they as good as Chile? I don't know. You know,
maybe it depends on the day.
Yeah, you know, Venezuela could be higher. Peru, they've been playing well as a team. But I think Jamaica is not getting enough credit in some of this in the ranking, just given they had to beat Canada to get to the Nations League semifinals, and then they took third. They beat Panama, and I think with Heimar Hallgrimsson as the manager, they've really taken steps forward as a group. And it's similar to Canada taking steps backwards, because when you don't have John Herdman, who got the most out of Canada defensively, because we know they have quality attacking players: Alphonso Davies, Tejan Buchanan, Kyle Lahren, Jonathan David, right? Those are quality attacking players. Defensively, they're very weak. They're weak. But Herdman got the most out of them and got them to play as a team. Without Herdman, not it. Not it. So for me, they should be lower in the ranking than where they are.
I have Canada as 7th, right? And because of what you talk about, I agree with you. They're not as organized defensively, and that is their weakness, and they have to come up with solutions like that. But when you play in tournaments like this, and how tight games can be, scoring goals is the biggest X factor, and scoring goals is not so easy to do. So I think you're right. Canada will have to figure out how they can be organized defensively and not give much away. And I think that some of that involves being a little bit more compact and deeper and being incredibly explosive on the counter, which is really what they are. And I think if they can figure that out, that their attacking group is, I mean, if you take out Argentina and Brazil, their attacking group is among then the best of the rest of the group. So, Canada will have a lot of kind of 3-2 matches. And then the question is, can they come out on top of those matches? And their group's not so easy, right? Their group is not so easy. But I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see what they look like in Copa America.
Yeah, with regard to Canada, they're in Group A. They play Argentina first. So Argentina is in Group A with Peru and Chile. And I think the big game for Canada then, let's just assume they're going to get beat by Argentina, which, again, still have to go out there and play the 90 minutes.
Saudi Arabia beat them,
that's true. Maybe Argentina
possible.
Maybe Argentina likes losing the first game so they can go on to win the tournament. But that game against Peru on the second match day in Copa America, Peru versus Canada, I think will determine whether they're getting out of their group or not, and whether they beat Argentina or not. Chile, I think, is going to be a difficult one. That's their last match day. That could determine whether they're getting into the knockout rounds or not. I agree, though. Go back to Jamaica really quick, Chuck. I agree that they should be. I had them at 11. I think they netted out at 12 in our combined groups. But I just don't know which players are going to show up for Jamaica. Obviously, I thought they were really well organized and against us, very stout and hard to beat for 94 minutes, and were unfortunate to give up that own goal and probably deserved a little bit more than they got from that. But if they have all their depth, I mean, they're going to have depth to have a nice run in this tournament. If some of their players don't show up, then it's going to be a little bit harder. So that's what made me a little bit put Jamaica a little bit lower, but I do think they deserve more respect than they're getting ultimately. Now, we had the group 7 group
and B, and the other, sorry, the other factor for Jamaica is who's coming in, you know, after the situation with Leon Bailey.
Right.
I mean, Michael Antonio, like, that will determine where they sit. You know, I think I agree with you. I think under Hamir, they're much more organized and they look like they have a better idea of how they want to play as a group. But they need to get their weapons. They need their best players to come to the tournament. You would hope and think that they will. And then, yeah, you could, whether those players come or not, then you could talk about Jamaica going up to or down to based on that.
Okay, we don't know who's going to be healthy or what. So this is very preliminary in our predictions. But let's just have a little fun game here. I'm going to say the group stage, or I'm going to say the group, and you guys tell me who you think the top two are going to be. It might be pretty straightforward, but maybe you guys have different opinions, and this can play into our power rankings a little bit. Group A, Argentina, Peru, Chile, Canada. Who comes out, Chuck?
Argentina and Chile.
Ooh, no syrup, no fun Canadian syrup, maple syrup. I didn't have a joke there. I was trying, but I don't have anything actually that's going to hit. Jesse, how about you? Top two coming out of that.
I'm going with Canada and Argentina. Argentina, Canada. Okay. But again, even when I looked at that group and I thought, okay, obviously Peru and Chile, two good teams. But when you talk about the athleticism and power of the attacking players of Canada against those defending groups, right? There's Chile and Peru, both have good players, a lot of players playing in Europe, but just not the same level of power that Canada has up front. So again, I can imagine games where if Canada keeps things a little bit more tight, win balls and get out on the counter, that you could have a lot of fun. You could have a lot of fun in this group with that team. So let's see how it goes.
I should have prefaced it. I think there's going to be one surprise team that's going to make a run. I don't know which team that's going to be. And maybe it's Canada that decides to show up and be good on both sides of the ball and make a run at it. Maybe it's Jamaica. So let's get into Group B. You have Mexico, Ecuador, Venezuela, and the Reggae Boys. Chuck, who comes out of Group B?
Great question, Jimmy. But you know where I'm going? Number one, Ecuador comes out of this group on top. And number two, don't make me say this, Mexico, L3, comes out.
I thought you were maybe not going to pick Mexico, and that would be
no
kind of
way.
Line. If Mexico doesn't get out of their group, they are really in shambles. They're already feeling like they're in shambles. Jesse,
let's be honest. This is our second take on this segment, and Charlie wasn't sure the first time for Mexico. So let's not let him off the let's not let him off the hook, Jimmy. All right,
that's true.
I was not sure for number two. It took me some time.
You wanted to say Jamaica. I still feel like Jamaica could be.
I really did, because I think Leon Bailey will come, and I think Mikel Antonio will come to play, and they're. If they're bought into Hamir Helgrimson's tactics, then I think they're going to pose a threat.
Jesse, I think this matters. The who you play and when, it makes a difference. Jamaica plays Mexico. Okay. Jamaica plays Mexico on match day one.
Woo!
That could be obviously that would make a big difference. And then Jamaica plays Ecuador, and then they finish with. Jamaica plays Venezuela last. I actually kind of like how it's setting up for Jamaica here. Now, Mexico might be feeling the same way. Cool. We'll get the 3 points against Jamaica. Then we play Venezuela second. And so maybe Mexico feels the same way. But I kind of like it more for Jamaica. Who's coming out?
Jamaica will be good on the counter again. They'll be good on – they're better on set pieces than Mexico, right? So there's potential. There's potential. But I would still – I go Ecuador, Mexico. I would think these two come out.
All right. I respect it. I feel the same way and want to show some respeto to our neighbors to the south. Okay, here we go. Let's go to Group C. We got USA, Uruguay, Panama, and Bolivia. Given that Panama didn't look great in the Nations League, even though I do have a lot of respect for their team. Bolivia, kind of bottom of the table, number 16 in our power rankings. I think it's pretty straightforward. We're all USA and Uruguay.
Yeah, who finishes one?
I didn't want to answer that. I will say, I'll go first. I'll say Uruguay gets first. And the U.S. gets second. But I'm hopeful it's the other way. I'm cautiously optimistic we can win our group.
I think that game could be a draw, and it may come down to the results of the other two matches, so right, difference. And how they match up. So I think it's going to be really tight between those two. But I'll take U.S. I'll go U.S. first and Uruguay second, just because I'm in the American kind of mood.
Of course. That's fine.
Yeah.
Chuck?
Pro U.S. Yes, I'm going to go U.S. goes first. They top the group.
Uruguay second. Okay, well, we cross over with Group D. And that's Brazil, Colombia, Paraguay, and Costa Rica. So, Jesse, I'll come to you first. Who's coming? Who's first and second for you in this group?
Yeah, it's Brazil and it's Colombia, right? And both, I think this just – I think the strongest two, like top two in a group is in this group. So I think – you know, and look, Brazil hasn't been great in qualifying. So – there's a chance that Colombia can catch them, and they've had good performances, and they've got a good squad. They're athletic. They match up well against Brazil. However, I would tend to think that in big matches in a big tournament that Brazil will bring its best group and be ready to play.
I feel like Group C and D, Chuck, are the most obvious in terms of the top two. Like Jesse said, and then Group D, maybe most in particular. That crossover, though, for the quarterfinals is going to be sick between Group C and Group D. How do you think it's going to play out? Who's first and second?
Well, I think it's a matter of proceeding to the semifinals or being out. So U.S., if they can top the group, I think they'll play Colombia. I think Colombia will finish second to Brazil, and you don't want to play Brazil because – Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo, and then you have Rafinha, but Endrick, it seems like Endrick is coming on strong. You know, they had these two, the last two friendlies that they had against England and Spain, toe-to-toe in Europe. They beat England in England, and they drew against Spain. So
I think Spain had a late goal, right? Or was it Brazil had a late goal? Brazil had a late goal.
Yeah.
I think Brazil is coming on strong. So you want to play Colombia if you have to pick out of the two. And the U.S. has if they're in good form and they're playing well, that they can get to a semifinals in that fashion.
When I look at Brazil,
well, here's what I'll say, Jimmy. Sorry for interrupting, but imagine if the U.S., instead of playing Jamaica, Mexico for the United Nations Cup, got the chance to play England and Spain in this window. I mean, just think of the difference. Right. So I don't know, man. This is why I of course, we'd always have qualifiers mixed in and different things happening at different windows. But we're missing out as a national team to not having the opportunity to play big European powers, big South American powers. This is the best thing for the development of our team.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's what I think, too. And then I just
anyway, is ridiculous. When you look at their team and their depth, it's crazy. Anyway, we're going to take our next break of Call What You Want. When we return, we'll get into our Americans abroad and who did what over the weekend. So don't go anywhere.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Call It What You Want. I'm Conrad Dino alongside Marshmallow and Chuck Wagon, and we are talking some Americans abroad. First, the notable results. Bournemouth with a big 2-1 win over Everton. Tyler Adams named man of the match on his full debut as a starter, and now Bournemouth are 16 points away from the relegation zone. I think they're going to be fine. They're going to stay up the cherries. Then we have Mets losing 5-2 to Monaco at home. Balogun comes off the bench, Flo Balogun, and scores twice. First one, pressuring the goalkeeper to knock it in, and the other one on the end of a corner kick. Good for him. That's exciting. Nottingham Forest 1-1 versus Crystal Palace. Gio Reyna subbed on to play the most minutes he's ever played for the club, 30 minutes, and had a hockey assist for Chris Wood's goal. Norwich 2-1 win, come from behind over Plymouth Argyle. Josh Sargent scores in his ninth straight home game. That's ridiculous. Huddersfield hosting Coventry, losing 3-1, and a couple of certainties in life. Death, taxes, and Haji Wright scoring in injury time. Those are the notable results. I'm coming to Jesse Marshmallow Marsh first. Jesse, who stood out for you? Americans abroad. What do you got for me?
Yeah, I watched Gio, and I was happy to see him get in the match earlier. And you're right, he played a role in getting the goal. I wouldn't really call it an assist, but he played a role. And, you know, they kind of rotated. They play – Nottingham plays a lot of 4-2-3-1. So then they made some changes when they were down a goal to Crystal Palace at halftime and then in the 60th minute when they put Gio on. And let me just say this. If Gio has to compete 1v1 with Gibbs-White is better. He, for me, is one of the best players on the teams in like the lower 5, 6, 7 teams. For me, he's an outstanding player. He can run. He can see final balls. He's athletic. He covers ground. He's intelligent. So for me, that will be a hard one for Gio to overcome. However, Gibbs-White also dropped a little bit deeper now once they played with both him and Gio. And it was more of a 4-1-4-1. And I think that there was a rotation happening between Gio sometimes coming a little bit deeper and then Gibbs-White coming a little bit deeper and then the other one pushing up. And in general, I thought Gio was fine. You know, I don't think he made a huge impact on the game, but certainly positive that right when he comes on, they get the equalizer. I would think that given the overall performance and the fact that the team got back in the game, that Gio will have earned himself some more minutes. And I'm sure that Nuno Espirito Santo also watched the Nations League games and thought, okay, what a great performance from Gio. Sometimes he played a little bit deeper. Maybe we don't just use him as a 10. Maybe we use him as a 6-8-10. And so hopefully we'll see Gio get more and more minutes. And certainly I think that Nottingham Forest needs some good performances and will need results because it's really tight down there at the bottom of the table. So yeah, overall, I thought fairly positive for Gio.
Yeah, good performance and excited. Hopefully that turns into more minutes. Nottingham Forest currently tied on 22 points with Luton. Luton are in the relegation zone and only on goal difference, minus 19 to minus 16 for Forest. Burnley on 18, Sheffield United on 15. Big games coming up. Ultimately, they play Fulham next, and then they go away to Tottenham, and then they got Man City on the calendar and Chelsea. But they do have Everton and Sheffield United and Burnley mixed in there as well. So some matches where I think if they can get that 9 to 10 points, should maybe see them over the finish line so they can stay in the Premier League. All right, Chuck, how about you? Who stood out for you this weekend?
Just Flaherty and Balogun scoring a brace off the bench. You know, not that that's an incredible goals that he scored. I mean, he's played 25 minutes. He got 16 touches, 8 of 10 passes he connected. But I think more importantly, just to get his confidence going because, you know, he hasn't been all that sharp. You know, he had scored one goal in his last 11 prior to this match. So, you know, that's like you're starving. If you're a striker, that's the moment where you're starving at that point. You're looking for anything. And he picks off the goalie who was trying to dribble out of the back. One of those goals that you always hope for as a striker, it never comes. He gets that one, right? And then off a corner, he's there to tap one in. So, you know, I think it's just more important to get him going again because you want him feeling confident and thriving heading into Copa America rather than, you know, being one of those strikers who's in and out of the lineup, not feeling all that connected in the attacking third. So positive steps for Balogun.
Monaco currently in third in league, 1 point behind Brest, who are in second, but a full 13 points behind PSG, who are top of the table, who had a big 2-0 win against Marseille in Le Classique this past weekend. Balogun, 8 goals this season. I think last year he had 20 plus for sure. I can't remember the final number, but obviously yeah, different situation.
Underperforming,
I would say, and not necessarily being relied on in the same way that he was at his previous club. All right, I'm going to go with Tyler Adams. I'm just going to give you the stats. I've already talked about him. We talked about him a little bit earlier. 90 minutes, 72 touches. That's a team high. So obviously on the ball and doing some things. 9 duels won, 6 recoveries, 4 tackles, that was a team high, and 4 interceptions, that was also a team high. And as I mentioned before, man of the match. Welcome back, Tyler Adams. It's great to have you healthy and ready to go. So excited, not only for you individually, but also for us collectively as a national team. We're better when you're on the field, and so I'm excited to see you stay healthy. That's number one. All right, let's get into some midweek footy fixes and footy fixtures that you should watch. Juve is taking on Lazio on Tuesday on the Golazo Network. The Coppa Italia semifinal kicks off at 3 p.m. Eastern. Nottingham Forest on Tuesday as well, taking on Fulham. We mentioned that's a big game. We'll see if Gio gets some more minutes. Then on Tuesday, Bournemouth versus Crystal Palace. That will see more, hopefully, minutes of Tyler Adams, unless they want to be a little bit more thoughtful with his minutes and maybe they rest him one and then play him the next. We'll see. Excelsior takes on PSV on Tuesday as well. That will be a good game. And then on Wednesday, Inter Miami taking on Monterrey in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. That kicks off at 8 p.m. Eastern. So some big games to look out for, even though it's a non-Champions League European Europa League week as well. That was a tough one for me to say. All right, we're going to take our next break. When we come back, we're going to get into, I'm going to bring in Arsenal's game against Manchester City this past weekend and how I think that ties into the U.S. men's national
team.
Yes,
let's talk about that.
It's going to be an interesting conversation. Don't go anywhere.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back to Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Jesse and Charlie, and we want to talk, or I do in particular, about this Manchester City Arsenal 0-0 bore fest where I want all 90 minutes of my life back watching that game. And what I thought was interesting was that Arsenal, who I think are one of the better clubs in the world and have the talent to do it, just played negatively or played safe and didn't really go for it. And I know that there's room to say, well, that's how you have to play against a team of Manchester City's caliber. But I feel like if you want to be the winner of the Premier League, you should be playing on the front foot or one of the best clubs in the world, not just sitting back and absorbing and parking the bus for 85 minutes and trying to hope that in those 5 minutes that you go forward, that you try to get something. And it almost worked. They had a couple of counters that were close. But I think about this performance, guys, as the U.S. men's national team, when they have a chance to see a Brazil or play against the Brazil or Colombia or whatever it's going to be, whether it's in Copa America or in these friendlies, I don't want to see us play like Arsenal did. I don't think that helps move the pro. At some point, we have to go toe-to-toe. I want us to play on the front foot and try to drive the game a little bit more than I saw Arsenal do against Manchester City. If we really want to get to where we want to go and continue to evolve as one of the better nations in the world so that we can actually be competing for World Cups as opposed to hoping that we can compete for World Cups one day. Jesse, I'm coming to you first with your coach hat on. What are you saying to this? Because I know Chuck with his Arsenal super fan thing is like, you know, bouncing in his chair to jump in here.
So for me, just looking at Arsenal strategy, saying, okay, we're going to Man City. And if before the match you say, we share the points, we get out of there with 1 point and we keep Man City below us. And I think given the remaining fixtures that they have, I believe there's 9 in the league, that gives Arsenal, I think, a better chance to outperform Man City or at least equal their total, which in theory then could keep them below you. So as a strategy, I don't disagree with the strategy of how to get out of there with a point. However, I see what you're saying, Jimmy. And forget the U.S. national team and just think about how do you continue to move your team forward and now find a way to against, right, the Man City that's sort of going to be the powerhouse, right, of the moment and of the last years. How can you now, after the years you've been together, after all the football you've put together, how do you put a match plan together that can be a little bit more aggressive, in my mind, where you're still also protecting yourself, but where you're really trying to see if you can push how good you can be on the day? And it's not that you want to go to Man City and go, all right, we're going to go toe-to-toe. You have to, I think, really have a good strategy about how and where you want to try to exploit them and what areas you want to protect. But in general, I felt that Arsenal, like you, could have been more aggressive, could have gone after the game more. But again, like you said, I mean, Arteta has to come up with a strategy beforehand. And maybe if they nick one of those goals and they get out of there 1-0, he's a genius. So this is such the interesting thing about football and why having it being such a low scoring sport, that the strategy of goals, and for me, why VAR is important, because I think the moments of goals determine games so much. So listen, I was hoping for a little bit more of a heavyweight fight than we got, but I understood why it played out the way that it did.
Chuck, I got to jump in here because I know it's not like for like, right? I'm trying to compare a national team and performing in a tournament to kind of the longer game strategy that Mikel Arteta has to have. But I think what frustrates me when I watch the Arsenal, they have so much talent, Arsenal. They're so good. And the fact that it felt like Arteta put handcuffs on these particular group of players to actually go for it bum me out. And I guess I'm using the Liverpool Man City game from a couple weeks ago as my barometer. That they went at it and Liverpool didn't sit back. I know they're at home and so it's different, but they went for it and both teams had six shots on goal and it was a great 1-1 result and it was a great game. And then you watch this and you think Arsenal could do the same thing. They're just electing not to, or the coach is electing not to, and the players just have to play within that system. And I respect that. However, I don't want us to always have handcuffs. We are so talented. And as we talked about earlier, when I talk about the national team, we have the depth and I think we have the talent to really go at teams. And I don't want us to have those handcuffs. And that's what I'm saying. I guess that's where I'm coming from. Go ahead. Take it away now.
Yeah. Jeff. And I think I'd go back in terms of this particular group to the England game in the World Cup. They didn't play with fear. They were missing a striker, an informed striker.
Example. I like that.
And that was where the U.S. stood toe-to-toe with England. And I'd say if you had to say who was better over the 90 minutes, you would say the U.S. men's national team outperformed England, even though it was a 0-0 game. But to go back to this Arsenal-Man City game, Arsenal, they went into it just saying, we can't lose. At the end of the day, we can't lose. If we draw, each team comes away with a point. If we win, fantastic. But I think when they were so focused on defending and preventing the one-on-one opportunities for Bernardo Silva and Phil Foden. So by the time that Bukayo Saka got the ball, he was dead. He was a ghost in this game because he lost the ball every damn time he touched it. And Kivior at left back, who's a center back, who is dreadful with the ball at his feet, gave the ball away every time he defended. So you were looking at an Arsenal side that were kind of handcuffed in the way that they played because they had to focus so much on defending. And that was Arteta's game plan was, hey, we're not losing this game. We're at least coming away with a point. And if we snatch three, great. And I think that's what you're talking about is, hey, could they be a little bit more dynamic on the counter in transition? Yes, they could have. But Gabby Jesus didn't take his chances. You saw when Martinelli came in, he made a great run, but Trossard didn't find him. So there was those opportunities. And I think with the U.S. men's national team, you can't go against Brazil and go toe-to-toe or Argentina. You can try, but if you don't want to get stretched and have Leo Messi one-on-one or have those opportunities where you're stretched, you want to limit those opportunities. And I think that's why it's a smart game plan to not concede and take those risks, those unnecessary risks. But if you're talking about the U.S.-Brazil in the Copa and the Confederations Cup in Spain, we defended perfectly. That was a tactical game plan. There was nothing pretty in the way we played. But when we did attack, when we did counter, we went with four. It was Josie, myself, Clint, and Landon. And that's it. Everyone else stayed at home. And we went. And we had the freedom, and it looked like we were courageous, but it was really three, sometimes two, four. But that was it. And we would go for it. And we went all in. And that's not the most appealing game, but at least you said, hey, they're going to go for it when they can counter. There's no, we didn't lose the ball. We lost the ball in the attacking third. So I think that's probably what you're referring to.
Well, yeah, you know, I definitely had those games from the Confederations Cup in mind because it was very cool to see us go at teams with confidence. And not to say this group won't do that. I just kind of curious as to what the game plan is going to be, especially for the friendlies, the two friendlies between or before Copa America between Colombia and Brazil or against those two teams. It's a good chance for us to maybe take those risks to let our team go for it a little bit more. And then we can scale it back as opposed to starting in a safe place. And then what happens when we do have to go chase a game, one Copa America kicks off and we're not maybe as comfortable with it because we didn't work on it in a high pressure situation. All right.
It's all about possession in midfield.
I'll get off my I don't know what, high horse? I'm not on a high horse. I'm on a medium-sized horse here talking about this stuff. But this is what potentially frustrates me. We're not there yet. I know that I'm speculating. Anyway, we're taking our last break. Call what you want. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jedi Robinson because we should. This guy is multi-talented. Don't go anywhere. right, so that's a look there at Jedi Robinson, who clearly is super talented on the piano. And shout out to Jedi for that skill. I know he does card tricks and all types of magic as well. Multi-talented, as I mentioned before the break. And we have Chuck here doing some karaoke. Chuck, I'll come to you first. Any yes. hidden talents of your teammates over the years? Like who, what do we know? I mean, or what don't we know that you're going to share with us?
You don't know Jack. There's no, I mean, I'm trying to think of an incredible talent that someone has. I mean, magic tricks. I mean, no one's got a great voice. There's no hidden singers. Nothing that comes to mind. What about you?
You got nothing. Nobody
has any secret talent. I'll tell you that right now. At least that I've come across on the national team.
Okay, maybe we'll have a call it what you want after dark episode so Chuck can get into what he really wants to say. Jesse, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, there was a few that came, you know, like, have you ever seen Frankie Hayek surf? Like, yeah, amazing.
That's a good one. He's a good surfer.
John O'Brien also. Yeah. John O'Brien also a very good surfer. You know, there some different sports more than, you know, I always find the musical talent. Like, John Wolniak could play guitar pretty well. We even talked about starting a band at the Chicago Fire, but it never really made it very far.
Who are the members and what instruments are they playing?
It was me, Evan Whitfield, Henry Ring, and John Wolniak, but all four of us played guitar very poorly.
Oh, I got one actually.
So I'm not sure that anyone was coming out, but you know, I mean, I think in general, footballers are pretty boring.
Stu Holden was a phenomenal harmonica player. Stu Holden, harmonica, could tap dance. Also speaks French fluently.
And he was very good at Counter-Strike. He made money playing video games. He would win video game tournaments.
Actually, he's a phenomenal online poker player.
That's Stu Holden. He won
six figures playing online poker.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I've coached players where we would find out that they were 18, 19, 20 hours on Fortnite or on these games, playing video games. And we'd have to sit down and talk to them and say, okay, I know that you only have to be at training 4 or 5 hours a day, but that doesn't leave 19 hours in the day to be on the computer playing video games. And sometimes they would be, sometimes they would be paid, or they would have, you know, they would have sponsorships and different things. Right. So, I mean, you want to always give players freedom to express themselves and be who they are, but like their profession, their day job always has to come first.
Hey, Jesse, so it keeps them out of trouble.
It could be
worse things that you're doing. You know?
I had a teammate who had a secret love for Ace Ventura. And who also scored a brace against for SoSho with his left foot, which, I mean, that is a hidden talent because we didn't even know he had a left foot. I think we have a clip that we can roll.
Are you kidding me?
This player's Charlie Davies. Let's take a look
at this.
Look
at the strength. Oh, first punch. Bang.
The turn is what was special for me.
That was a good goal. That was a very good
goal.
Bumped the defender. Create a little room. Boom.
Look at that. Boom.
I love that.
I'm not sure about the keeper, but nonetheless, a good goal.
Defending league champions here.
This one, yep. This is a clearance. Left-footed clearance that somehow goes in.
I have a lot of questions about defending as well.
Look at this clearance.
It goes in and comes out. Oh, yeah. I'll take that.
Chuck, I didn't even know you had a left foot. I just thought you stood on it. So it was really cool to see that this exists and we can actually see you score a couple goals.
Back in the day.
Left foot, right foot, strength, quickness. I don't know. Play short. Play over the top. It doesn't matter. I'll get to it.
Average to good.
Average to good.
There we go.
All right, everybody. We're going to call it a day here on Call It What You Want, your favorite Average to Good podcast. We look forward to seeing you next week. Enjoy the rest of the days. Enjoy those midweek fixtures. And we'll see you very, very soon. Later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever,
or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.